That's what I was thinking, Ducairn said, and looked at Trenaire and Clinton. As Mother Church's treasurer, I may be more aware than the rest of you of how much money we're putting into Taro, and for how little return. That blockade's been damnably effective, and Taro's paid less than a third of its usual tithe ever since the war began. For that matter, this year the Exchequer doesn't expect Gorja to be able to pay at all. To be brutally frank, losing the kingdom completely would be barely a bump as far as our finances are concerned. So I think what we really need to think about are the political and military consequences. And, as Elaine's just said, losing Taro from our side would have very little impact on our capabilities. So how much would gaining Taro help the other side?
An interesting point, Clinton said thoughtfully. The political damage would be worse, I think, if only as an example of ongoing erosion. Militarily, I doubt Taro would add much to Caleb's military capabilities. In fact, it would give them still more territory to protect, which would spread their forces even thinner.
By the same token, though, Magwer pointed out, it would give them a naval base right off the Sidamark coast. It would dominate the Gulf of Taro and close off the Taro Channel, which would pretty much isolate the Gulf of Matthias.
Drive a wedge between our northern squadrons and Desnair, you mean? Trenaire asked.
Exactly. But how realistic a concern is that? Ducairn asked. I mean, if Rockpoint's already basing his squadron in Thole Bay, then they've already got a naval base right there on the Taro Channel, don't they?
Well, yes, Magwer admitted slowly.
Then the only real difference is that it would become an official naval base, Ducairn pointed out.
So what you're suggesting, Robert, is that we not act precipitously and give Gorja a pretext for deserting us, but continue to investigate cautiously, Trenaire said. If we find proof, real proof, or at least strongly suggestive evidence, we can go ahead and try to arrest him. And if it should happen he either surprises us by actually changing sides, or goes over to Caleb after we give him that pretext, it's not really going to hurt us that much militarily or economically.
More or less, Ducairn shrugged. This is your area of expertise, yours and Jaspar's, where the politics are concerned, and Elaine's where the military's concerned. I'm simply trying to examine this question from all perspectives. It's not, he finished dryly, as if we haven't gotten ourselves into trouble upon occasion by acting too precipitously. Clinton flushed at the none-too-oblique reference to his own final solution to the Carizian problem. He chose to let it pass, however. At the same time, his eyes took on a thoughtful look. He sat silently pondering for several seconds, then nodded to himself and refocused his eyes on the other three.
I'm not sure keeping our hands off Taro is the right way to proceed. On the other hand, I'm not sure it isn't the right way either. He shrugged. Under the circumstances, I think a wait-and-see attitude's less likely to go catastrophically wrong, though. At the same time, I think we ought to think about ways to disaster-proof our position, as it were, if Taro does switch sides.
What do you have in mind? Trenaire sounded a bit cautious, and Clinton smiled.
I'm not planning on running off in a bout of excessive enthusiasm, Zompson. I was just thinking about what Elaine said about Taro's strategic position, about its offering the Carizians a naval base between our northern squadrons and Desnair.
And?
And it occurred to me that one way to prevent that from becoming a problem would be to concentrate our forces in the Gulf of Matthias right now, before Taro does whatever it is Gorja's planning to do.
What? Trenaire blinked.
Look, it's already September, Clinton said, and twitched his head in the direction of the council chamber's window.
Icy rain pounded down outside, and nearly leafless branches swayed in the wind.
It won't be long before Sing Wu's passage starts to freeze over again. When that happens, our northern squadrons, The ones we've built here in the Temple Lands, and all the ships Ha Chong's built in her northern ports, are going to be stuck. If we get them out now, before the ice closes in, and send all of them to Desnair, we'll have all 74 Desnarian galleons, and at least 50 or 60 each from Ha Chong and the Temple Lands. That's between 170 and 200 galleons, in one concentrated force, less than 2,000 miles from Taro and barely 3,000 from Karis. If we get them there before Gorja changes sides, it might suggest to him that treason would be a bad idea. And even if they don't get there until after he changes sides, or if he goes ahead and betrays us despite their presence, we'd have a serious force in place, both to threaten Taro and Karis, and to force them to redeploy against it. After what Thirsk did in the Gulf of Dolar, they'd have to take that threat seriously, don't you think?
Trenaire and Dukern were both looking at him in surprise now. As a general rule, Clinton didn't much concern himself with military movements. Partly, Dukern thought cynically, because it had been his breezy confidence where military affairs he'd known nothing about were concerned, which had launched this entire disaster in the first place.
"I don't know, Jaspar," Maguire said slowly. "The new constructions scattered up and down the length of the passage. We'd have to get it all into one place first. And a good quarter of the ships we've managed to launch and rig still don't have their artillery." He grimaced. "I'm afraid our foundries have been slower to really hit their stride than we'd anticipated. And frankly, Ha Chong's foundries are nowhere near as efficient as they could be either. They've got a lot of them, but their output's lower even than ours. For that matter, their best ones are in South Ha Chong, in Shui and Kuznetsov. And before Thirsk ran the Carizians out of Claw Island, they put a major hole in the delivery of the guns South Ha Chong had managed to produce.